Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology, procurement and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those who are leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best known companies. The Digital Insight, disrupt, transform, evolve.
Welcome to the Digital Insight podcast. In today's episode, digital transformation executive Paul Baylow returns to kickstart a brand new trilogy on data transformation. This is the Data Transformation Trilogy, Part 1. Data, leadership, and C-level talent. Do you have it? When a CTO is embarking on a digital transformation journey or a data transformation, we often focus on the technology or the solutions he or she looks to implement. But what about the people? How high up should talent be on the list of priorities when it comes to data transformation?
Yeah, well, talent, as you know, is the critical asset to any organization. It's really the keystone to everything we do in digital and data. If you don't have the right talent, the game's over. I mean, when you really think of a company, right? The most valuable asset goes home at 5 o'clock. Nowadays, it never goes home because everyone's working from home. But in any organization, in digital transformation and data transformation, in manufacturing, no matter what it is, it's all about the people, right? I mean, it's all about the people. Even if you look at a Ford Motor Company and they have all these robots, it's still the people who had to build the robots. The people have to maintain the robots. So there is no greater asset than the people in your organization and yourself. So what we have to start thinking about is think of yourself even as an asset, a valuable asset to an organization. You as an individual have to be investing in yourself. Forget about buying Apple stock or Google stock or Facebook stock. Go buy yourself an education. And I'm just talking about a formal education or a graduate degree, but stay in the game and keep thinking, right? Keep learning, keep pushing your mental intellect, because that's the most valuable thing in the world. Someone had an idea, right? Someone said, I'm going to create Google, or I'm going to create a new way of a new vaccine. I'm going to be looking at data differently because I'm going to be looking at data in transformation to look at insights. So the value of companies comes from the people, and the value comes from being creative. See, creativity is an individual component. Innovation is the commercialization of creativity. And creativity can only happen by individuals, by imagining and seeing the world differently and thinking the world differently and really looking at data differently to drive the insights to make these change and transformations. So When CFOs look at their financial statements, there's no line for people. It's actually a line of cost, right? How much of the benefits, how much of the salaries, but you can't survive without the people, right? We put value on a piece of machinery. We put value on a brand. We put value on real estate. And we sort of say, okay, I'm going to give you a salary. So you're sort of putting a value on it, but it's really the people is the reason a company is belonging and being. It's make money, save money, do good in the community, and supply really good jobs for people, honorable jobs. But at the end of the day, none of this holds true unless you have real good, talented people. Now, individuals have to also be in this game because they have to keep pushing the envelope in their learning. I mean, when you look at, look at data and the data transformation, I mean, only recently, in the last few years, have there ever been a high qualification type of analytic programs in order for people to actually understand data, right? It's all relatively new. So the marketplace is saying, look, data is the future, right? Data is the fuel to digital. And when we're pushing data, individuals really have to say, do I have the right talent? Do I have the programming abilities? Do I have the analytic mindset? Do I know how to write algorithms? Do I understand machine learning? And the answer is no to that. It's not to say give up. It's to build a program for yourself in order to get more educated or better educated to learn these trades. I'm not saying you have to go to Columbia or Harvard or Rice or Yale. I'm saying there are very good programs that you need to learn. And now that learning just increases your value. And not only if you're looking for a new job, but even if you're in a job, you should always be looking to read and take a class and increase the value. I mean, the world is changing. You have to change with it. Now, you could also take the viewpoint that I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, but you just put a shelf life on your career. So at the end of the day, the biggest asset to any organization is always the people. Nothing happens without high quality, high skilled talent. There's no way around this.
It's no secret then that the people that you have in your organization are your biggest and most valuable assets. So when it comes to data transformation, why isn't your talent grabbing all the headlines?
Yeah, I think you said it. It's you know, the technology is cool and sexy. It's a shiny object in the room. You know, it's written up all over the place. Executives like to stroke their ego. But the really smart executives say, hold on. Before this happens, I got really good talent, right? When you read an annual report, you have a bio of all these great talented people. In my own personal executive experience, when I'm at the boardroom, hardly anyone says anything about, wow, these are good people. These people did a great job. What they say is, look, here's the revenue. Here's how much I made. Here's how much I saved. And going back to the point of looking at the annual report, there's no list of all the great things people done, right? It's not in the financials. So money talks. People and talent usually take secondary stage because it really is sort of an understood thing. I have people, but really good leaders, right? Really develop their people, and really good leaders develop their people skills. And when you have a leader who actually wins an award or actually is on stage, they don't make it about themselves. They make it about the people who got them there. I don't know anyone in the world who's been successful by themselves. I just don't see how anyone could say, I did a great job. I deserve to be in the boardroom. How about mom and dad, your brothers, your sisters, your father? I mean, it all helped get you here, your professors and people, your mentors. So for some reason, I think a lot of people look at it like, wow, here's a really cool technology. This is really psych. But I think you have to stop for a moment and say, wow, there had to be some really good talented people to build that new software. Or if you're looking at a new drone, it's like, wow, this is really cool. We could do cool stuff and it's collecting all this great data. But the reality of it is wow, there's really smart people behind this. But this is where, when we think about true leadership in the digital and analytics space of leaders, the really good ones will stop a moment and let and acknowledge and recognize people. That's a sign of a great leader, right? I'm not talking, you know, it's really very, very, very good creative people move the needle in digital and data, right? It's really the thinking and grooming yourself and wiring or rewiring your brains to be extremely creative, which allows people to do really great innovation.
The last 12 months has unfortunately seen many organizations switch their attentions to cutting costs and saving capital, and one of the first places they often look at is its people. For many, this has led them to feel like less of a key asset and more like a number on a spreadsheet. So how have companies had to think differently about their talent and how they retain it?
So I think once again, it's going back to the culture of the organization. So you have this virus and people now have been disseminated and, you know, are now virtual. So the question really is what you're seeing, even in the stock market, you're realizing this new model, right, of decentralized work is actually working, because when you look at the annual reports and you look at Wall Street, the companies are making money, right? And if anything, being centralized and not having commercial real estate in the major cities like New York City or San Francisco actually is saving people a lot of the company's money because they're not buying all this, need all this real estate. What has to happen though is individuals have to realize that yes, you want to be recognized. Yes, you want to do great work. But at the end of the day, you have to make sure you're making money, right? The goal of people is just to sort of, you know, build this idea that you have to be pushing the envelope for the bottom line. That if you're getting a salary and benefits, you have to really say, my job is to make more than they're paying me. My job is to be invaluable to the organization. My team needs to be, you know, highly successful and valuable that we're driving revenue. The existence of companies really is to make money or save money. So at the end of the day, the really smart leaders realize that building the right culture, supporting people as individuals, and then really being innovative, creative, and thinking about digital and data, and having people sign up for really big results will drive the fact that people are highly valuable. But at the end of the day, the formula and the existence for companies is to make money, right? I mean, that's sort of what it is, right? It's you're not going to have a group or a team that aren't really, you know, pushing the envelope to drive, you know, value. Even in nonprofits, at the end of the day, you have to make money, right? It's salary plus benefit plus taxes plus Medicaid plus everything else. My mind immediately says, how do I make 10 times that? Because that makes me and my team more valuable. There's always that math equation that has to sort of, you know, play out in a sense. But organizations have to be really, you know, caring, heartfelt, and understand that people are going through a lot of issues. It's not, you know, with this virus, you know, people are concerned and worried. I mean, so the smart organizations say, look, one, we know we have to make money. Two, we know we have to cut costs. But three, we have to treat people fairly and take care of them because it's moral. Because long-term, it's always about the people, really smart people, right? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when there's big problems, it's a handful of people who solve this, right? No matter what, it's people who are going to solve these problems, right? Who understand the business. The worst thing you want to do is blatantly say, we're losing money, we fire everyone. And there goes your entire talent, right? Out the door. And the minute you need them, they're nowhere to be found. Organizations exist to make money. So be part of that.
The bottom line for any company is, and always will be, about making money. So when it comes to adopting new approaches to their existing people and recruiting future talent, what sort of impact do we see when doing so under the constant pressure of making money?
Yeah, it's going to be painful, right? Change is painful. I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do. I mean, look, just recently in the United States, you had Texas, the entire state of Texas went out. They knew exactly what they needed to do. They knew it 10 years ago. The report was done. The leaders did it. They did nothing. Inactivity is humankind. There's no pain in the system for them to act. So they choose not to act. They choose not to spend the money. It's like people who drive a car and they choose not to get an oil change every 5,000-6,000 miles. You bought the car, you have to maintain it, right? I mean, it's just normal. So if you want to have a car that runs to 300,000 miles, take care of it. But the leadership chooses not to do things. So when you start looking at these new models, not everyone's going to survive, right? Not everyone's going to survive. Either they're not going to move quick enough, they don't have the right talent, they don't have the right skill set, and they really miss the boat. You have hundreds of companies in the graveyards that basically did a great job. They didn't see the future, they didn't react to it, and it's over. So if organizations choose not to have foresight, not to see what's coming, well, then that's okay too. So your business model is there's a shelf life and you're going to run the company as long as you can until you have to close the doors. But look, if you're fat, dumb, and happy and you're making a lot of money right now and there's not enough pain in the system, no one's going to do anything. It's the really smart companies that realize what got them here won't get them there.
We as consumers and as employees are as informed about the inner workings of businesses than ever before, thanks to the data that's available. So how much do companies need to consider that the decisions that they make internally regarding their people can have a huge impact on how attractive they are as a workplace for the talent and the leaders of the future?
Well, they have to. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I was at Harvard at a career fair, right? I was speaking about innovation, and we had this huge career fair. The line was out the door for some companies, and other companies, no one was actually at their table. Okay. So you go in, there's probably 200, 300 different tables, different companies. And I'm looking and watching and saying, Bain, out the door. McKinsey, out the door. Literally, and I mean out the door, I mean out the door. Other companies, no one's even lying. They're secondary. The secondary thoughts, these very young, very intellectually powerful students. Even at Columbia, we had over 300 different companies there. The line was out the door for a Google, a McKinsey, a Bain, an EY, right? But they're there for a reason, right? If you look at their corporate culture, right? One, they pay very well. Two, it's very challenging. You're going to be highly marketable, you know, if you decide to either, you know, stay or go, right? And the culture is very open and supportive. So young people, the talent that I'm trying to, the disciples of data and digital that I'm trying to create, they're going to have a choice of where they want to work and how they want to work, right? There's not enough data digital people out there, right, who've actually been through this, who've been trained formally, who have the technical and the leadership components. There's very few of us and very few students who actually know this. So they're really going to be in the driver's seat to these companies. And they're not going to say, you know, they have the ability to say no, which is a very powerful tool. It's not just the fact they're graduating with a master's degree in applied analytics or a master's degree in digital transformation or in e-commerce. They're going to have these powerful degrees from these powerful universities, and they're going to be in the driver's seat. And it's not going to be financial. Right? It's, this is what I want my life to be. And this is what I want from you. And I want you to be an honorable company. I want you to be doing the right thing. I want to be proud of the company. And if not, well, I don't want to work for you. What where organizations have to start thinking about is, I think they have it backwards. They have to really be, if they want to survive, right, for the long term, they have to really be the top organization that people are striving to do. And a simple example of this is CEOs and executives, when their companies have a job fair, just go for a moment and see if people wind up at your table. And if they're not, there's something wrong. So it's very interesting, right? And in my microcosm, they're looking and saying, I want a good job. I want to learn. I want to be challenged. I want good leadership. I want to be an honorable company. I want to grow my career. I want to make sure that you care about me. I want things that are changing, right? I mean, this generation moves very quickly. So it's not like I'm going to spend 10 years here, right? You're lucky you get 2 or 3 years and they want to move, or they want to move and do something interesting in 6 months. So the companies that adapt to this, right, doing the cool, interesting, super sexy type of stuff, they're going to have the pick of the talent that they want.
With transformation and change, there is no guarantee of success, no right way and no wrong way to go about it. What there is, however, is data. So what can we learn from past examples of how companies have successfully, and some not so, navigated their own data and talent transformations?
Search for the truth. Search for the truth. Find out what's working and what's not working, and be honest with yourself. Why are certain people attracted to your company? Why are other people not? And what do you really want to do about it? And I think in the board level, people at the board really have to search for the truth and say, do you really want to do something about this? Because if you don't, then don't. It's fine. Don't waste anyone's time. But if you're really saying, this isn't working, and be the voice of reason, and be the person who's going to be the truth teller, right? Mm-hmm. Be the truth teller. So if people who are listening to our podcast and want to take anything away from this, is really search for the truth in your organization. Stand up and say, look, I think we got a problem here. I don't think we're the best organization. And we're not the best organization because of ABC. But your next step has to be, and because we're not the best organization, you have to define what that means to be the best organization. And then to say, look, we're not attracting the talent that we need, right? Or demand. And that's really an internal sort of insight that you have to be honest with yourself. But I also think it happens not only on the leadership end, I think it has to happen on the employee end too, right? Be honest with yourself and search for the truth.
So there we have it. When thinking about data transformation, are you looking close enough at your existing leadership and talent base? And are you looking at what the potential leaders of the future want to see from your organization? Be sure to subscribe and listen out for the Data Transformation Trilogy Part 2, where we look at change management and ask, why do we hate it so much?